From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Starbucks cafes across the country will close this afternoon for racial bias training in the wake of an incident in a Philadelphia Starbucks last month. Two black men were arrested seemingly for the crime of not buying anything. Millions have watched an online video of the event. Our guests, Professor Ray Winbush of Morgan State and Adar Ayira of Associated Black Charities, say what happened demonstrates a much larger problem.
White people know that they can call police and say, I am afraid, or even I am uncomfortable, and have a policeman come and remove the black body.
Can a corporation have an impact on the racial dynamic in this country? What should Starbucks do to affect change? It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. If you're in the market for an afternoon frappuccino today, you're out of luck. That's because more than 8,000 Starbucks cafes across the country will be closed. This afternoon, instead of slinging coffee, the corporation's 175,000 employees will undergo racial bias training. This is all happening because of an incident last month in Philadelphia. Two African-American men, Rashawn Nelson and Dante Robinson, went to a Starbucks cafe for a business meeting. They asked to use the restroom and were told they couldn't because they hadn't purchased anything. Shortly after, the manager called the police and the men were arrested. A video of the incident went viral and protests and a barrage of criticism followed. Starbucks CEO Kevin Johnson apologized, calling what happened a, quote, reprehensible outcome, end quote. Soon after, the corporation announced it would conduct today's racial bias training. Starbucks is consulting with some big names in this effort, including Brian Stevenson of the Equal Justice Initiative, Sherrilyn Ifill of the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund, and a former U.S. Attorney General, Eric Holder. A few days ago, Starbucks released a video preview of the elements the training will include, wrapping up with this pledge.
But remember, 529 will just be a start. In the coming weeks, months, and years, we will address many other facets of what makes us truly human. The work will grow to reflect the realities of our abilities, ethnicities, gender identities and expressions, sexual identities, class, language, citizenship, political views, religious affiliations, and more.
Is this effort a PR stunt, or is it something more? Can anti-bias training work on this scale? Two people who have studied the dynamics of racism in America are with us to discuss the Starbucks effort. Adar Ayira is Director of Programs at Associated Black Charities and a longtime anti-racism trainer. Adar, welcome to On the Record.
Thank you for having me.
And Raymond Winbush is a professor at Morgan State University and director of the Institute for Urban Research there. Professor Winbush, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Sheila.
Professor Winbush, I mean, there have been videos of police shootings of unarmed black people that have generated less media attention than this incident. Why do you think this resonates so much?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, Starbucks itself is kind of an American icon, and this situation, unlike the police encounters, had absolutely nothing to do with violence or anything else like this. So people said, Starbucks, isn't that the liberal bastion where you get a cappuccino and you open up your laptop and just start working? Yes, it is. But it also shows how this is something that is not an isolated incident. I mean, we can go back to vagrancy laws back right after the end of the Civil War.
So looking at what Starbucks is proposing, Adar Ayira, you've been an anti-racism trainer for more than 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
If you were doing this, how would it look different than what Starbucks is proposing?
It would not be one afternoon. it would be a sustained effort, and I would start working with the leadership staff and with the CEOs and with the corporate stakeholders in that organization. What we know is that implicit bias or any other training by itself is not effective. So I would recommend that they do a racial equity audit in their organization, because there are some policies, there are some procedures, and there are some practices that back what those employees are doing. What we know is that Philadelphia, that's not the only Starbucks where this has happened. And so there is something about the Starbucks culture that says in some way that this is okay. And so the work would be sustained. It would be with leadership as well as frontline staff. And it would go beyond the implicit bias training. Implicit bias training now is being looked at as a catch-all problem solver, and it is not, because actually what we're talking about is a lot deeper than just an implicit bias. It is an implicit bias with decision-making power attached to it, and that is what makes it so potent and so dangerous.
Raymond Winbush, what are your thoughts about what Starbucks is promising to do?
See, when you say, I'm going to call the police, when a white person says that to a black person, they are saying, in essence, I want to do violence to you. I know that what police do to black men, I know what police do to black women, and I'm going to use that as a tool to hurt you right now. So it's more than just calling the police. It's kind of reaching back into that old American bag of racism and pulling out a tool. 150 years ago, it would have been a rope, and using that tool to threaten the physical bodies of black people. It would be bad for us to just say this is a Starbucks
yes.
thing. It's much, much broader than
Absolutely.
That. Much broader than that.
Mm-hmm.
This is On the Record on WIP. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Raymond Winbush, head of the Institute for Urban Research at Morgan State University, and Adar Ayura, an anti-racism trainer as well as director of programs at Associated Black Charities. We're talking about Starbucks' decision to close more than 8,000 stores today in order to conduct racial bias training. Adar Ayura, let me pick up on one of the many ideas you've put forth. Starbucks is planning to train its employees on implicit bias.
Mm-hmm.
What is implicit mm-hmm. bias?
So it is the ways in which the way that we act, what we believe, is different than how we think ourselves to be. The best example that resonates in our public consciousness now is that there are people saying, well, I can't be racist because I voted for Obama. So don't call me a racist because I voted for Trump. I voted for Obama too, so therefore I can't be. Or people who say, well, wait a minute, my best friend is black, or whatever, because they're basically using it, their sense of who they think they are, as a shield to cover up the ways in which their thoughts, their beliefs, their attitudes are really skewing toward racism.
Cover up from themselves?
From themselves, right.
So how does implicit bias differ mm-hmm. from old-fashioned racism?
It is old-fashioned racism. When we talk about racism, when we talk about white supremacy, when we talk about sexism, however we want to parse historical oppression in society, right? What we are talking about is impact. This country always wants to focus on intent. Did you intend to call the police on me and for the police to arrest me? We saw the chairman of Starbucks say that the woman who called the police did not intend for those men to be arrested. We don't want to deal with the impact of what happened. And that is what black people are left dealing with, the impact of what happened, not your intent.
I think also that white America always seeks to soften words like white supremacy. So we have substitute words like white privilege,
mm-hmm.
Implicit bias. And the other thing about implicit bias is it says that everybody is racist. If you look at the actual research that was originally done at Yale, that everybody's biased, black folk, white folks, Asians, you know, Latinx, you know, all people, as opposed to saying racism. and it's a softer word. It's, you know, it's throwing a tennis ball as opposed to a fastball on the issue of racism, white supremacy.
And that's one reason why implicit bias, I believe, is becoming this big thing now, because people can facilitate it as a brain science in a way that does say, yes, we all have bias, which of course we do. Mm-hmm. But that is very different than the political power, than the historical analysis, as well as current condition and how it's played out, of implicit bias when there is racialized power behind it, and how that serves to create a condition of storm where you can have an Airbnb incident or the Starbucks incident or the hundreds of other incidents that we can talk about where we see the same thing happening. The thing that those things have in common is that white people know that they can call police and say, I am afraid, or even I am uncomfortable, and have a policeman come and remove the black body.
So you see implicit bias training as not nearly enough, but is it a good place to start?
It's a better place to start, but I believe that you gotta just tell people the history of this country. Most Americans don't understand the history of racism in this country to the extent that they can even have an intelligent conversation about what happened. Not only black folk, but Chinese, Native Americans, and other groups, you know, coming to this country. So I'm glad as a psychologist that I'm beginning to see people starting to question the effectiveness of so-called diversity training. And as Adar said, this whole thing about how implicit bias is everywhere. Now, I used to be asked to do diversity training seminars. Now I'm asked to do implicit bias training, you know. So people are beginning to question, why is this so vaunted right now, as opposed to really dealing with the real issue, which is a system of white supremacy in this country.
We have to take a quick break here. I want to pick up on that when we come back. We'll look at the wider impact Starbucks' efforts to eradicate racial bias in its workforce might have. More than 8,000 Starbucks locations are closed this afternoon for anti-bias training. This is On the Record. Adar Ayira of Associated Black Charities and Raymond Winbush of Morgan State University are with us. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about Starbucks' racial bias training. The corporation is closing stores across the country today in response to an incident in Philadelphia last month in which two African-American men were arrested for staying in a Starbucks without ordering anything. Starbucks released a video last week about goals for the training, including this exchange between Rachel Godsell of the Perception Institute and Starbucks board member Melody Hobson. First, Hobson.
Today, when we close down our stores to get more training and hopefully come away with more learnings around bias, can we structurally change the organization?
So I think we would say the structural work is something that has to be done for far longer than the four-hour day.
And that's policy?
That's the work the company has to do to support the partners in the individual work, because one of the things we don't want to see is for each person to have to bear this burden alone.
Our guests are Raymond Winbush, director of the Institute for Urban Research at Morgan State University, and anti-racism trainer Adar Ayira, director of programs at Associated Black Charities. Adar Ayira, some people say, I think you mentioned it, that bias training can actually be counterproductive.
Mm-hmm.
People don't like being told what to believe, particularly by their employer, and nobody likes to be called racist. Is there a potential for backlash?
In all of this type of work, there's always a potential for backlash. And that's another reason why an afternoon won't do, because people have to go along a journey. Understanding the history of racism and white supremacy in America is a journey, and it is the opposite of everything that we have been taught to believe about this country. There is a strong mythology of this country that is reinforced at every football game, at every baseball game, every sporting event, in classrooms across the country. So now you're coming along and saying, well, wait a minute, this is not the story of this country. And there is the pushback. So if you have 3 or 4 hours, you're not going to get people to understand the history. You're not going to be able to take them along their own emotional journey, because this isn't just about facts and figures. It is about the emotional journey that people have to take. If you're doing implicit bias from a brain science way that we all have bias, then nothing gets accomplished, because you've left out the power component and you've left out the currency of white skin component that operates in American society every day. And so people can walk out feeling very resentful of that. If the journey is a longer journey, people have an opportunity to work through their feelings of resentment. They have an opportunity to sit with the historical information and really to parse out what is different about it from their own beliefs, from what they've been taught, and to reconcile that with where we are now. And you get people thinking in terms of race and power as opposed to the mythology of the country and this being a personal, interpersonal, what did these Black people do wrong conversation, up to a how do our institutions and how do the historical structures of society support and enable and reward what we are seeing now in terms of how people who are not white in America are being treated.
Ray Winbush, Adar just led us back to a point that you presaged earlier, this problem obviously bigger than Starbucks. But can larger cultural change begin with a corporation? 175,000 people is a lot of people to get a message in one afternoon. Could that make a difference?
Right. And I think we've established that that is impossible. You know, it's really interesting that, like at Morgan State, I'm asked to and participate in issues of sexual harassment, you know, on an annual basis, or I have to report annually if there's any ethics conflicts, you know. And I work for the state of Maryland. I mean, Starbucks will suffer because whatever the money they're losing today.
And the estimates are something like $30 million.
Exactly. And so investing in anti-racism training is really profitable if you think about it. And not only for corporations, but for movie studios, for state departments, a variety of things. So I think that, unfortunately, America, you always have to make a link between things as it relates to the bottom line. Maybe Starbucks will be the first in a way to say, we get it, and we're going to start building into our corporate culture anti-racism training that will, you know, filter down and be a constant within the corporation. But right now, that isn't happening.
Part of the statement that Starbucks CEO made was, this day of education starts a new era for Starbucks. At first, when they talked about the implicit bias mm-hmm. training, they didn't seem to be including social scientists. Now they are. Mm-hmm. And they've included some big names. As I mentioned, Sherrilyn Ifill of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund and former Attorney General Eric Holder. Mm-hmm. Does any of that give you some hope that this could have an impact?
You know what? It depends on what they're going to do after the day. Is this going to be curriculum that is practiced? And what does that look like? It has to be something that you see through their policies. It has to be something that starts from the top. I wonder if their leadership are part of the Starbucks employees who are going to be trained. I wonder if they are going to be trained to better help shepherd those 170,000+ workers in their day-to-day practices. I wonder whether what will be incorporated is a zero tolerance of racist white supremacist action, because in prior statements that he made, he said that the young person who called the police didn't mean for this to happen. I mean, it seemed like he was almost justifying mm-hmm. and covering what she did without giving that same level of thought to the impact of her actions on the lives of the two black men who were arrested, dragged off, detained for doing absolutely nothing at all. When you have a record, even if you haven't been convicted, in particular for black people, the assumption is that you are guilty.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Adara Ayira, Director of Programs at Associated Black Charities, and Raymond Winbush, Head of the Institute for Urban Research at Morgan State University. Professor Winbush, you mentioned diversity training as something that used to be the focus, now that has been sort of superseded by implicit bias training. Only 18% of Starbucks executives are minorities. Is diversity training and increasing diversity what they should be focusing on more than the training they are doing?
Well, the answer is yes. And getting back to what Adara says, we never hear these discussions about power mm-hmm. when it comes to racism. We kind of separate them out from each other. If, you know, we knew right now that, I don't know, 30 or 40% of Starbucks employees, top to bottom, and especially in executive positions, were people of color, black, Asian, Latinx, whatever. Then I would say, wow, they're starting to get this. But the numbers are still low. And bias in hiring goes back to the issue of power. We've seen this in corporations like Xerox. When you place a black woman, for example, as CEO of Xerox, things change within the organization, the same at universities. So I hope that this is the first step in a long step with not only Starbucks, but other American corporations.
Mm-hmm. And can I just say that the whole thing about diversity, when we talk about diversity, basically what we're talking about is representation. Who's in the room? And this is why what Dr. Winbush was saying about the whole power component is so important. I could be the head of a corporation with 20 million employees, right? So say that of that 20 million employees, the bulk of them, about 90%, are people of color. That's diversity, right? But is that enough? Because the other 10%, which is my high-level decision-making staff and my corporate stakeholders, all of them are white. So is diversity enough? And we're saying diversity is not enough.
It's power.
It is understanding the currency that white skin privilege has in terms of the history of this country, in terms of the resources allotted to whom, whether we're talking about those business loans, whether we're talking about who can afford to go to college or not, whether we're talking about what communities the police protect and what communities they just, what?
Drive through.
They drive through, or what communities they profile. I mean, this issue of power as it plays out in race is an everyday dynamic that people of color in this country, when you step out of your house, and oftentimes when you're in the sanctity of your own home, that you cannot avoid, that white people never have to think about unless it is just forced into their public consciousness.
What will you be looking for after today to see if Starbucks is on a different track?
Well, first of all, I'm going to look for whether or not any more incidents like this happen in the next year. I mean, something very pragmatic. And I want to see hiring practices not only at the bottom level, those 170,000, what are they going to do with their board? What are they going to do with those mid-level managers, mm-hmm. those regional managers? Will there be an aggressive program to increase the number of people of color there? And if it isn't, then I'll say if it was a nice day, a nice romp, you know, and we'll see what the next crisis brings.
I agree. And we should, in addition to that, I would want to see what policies, you know, the difference in policies. And I would want to see what accountability practices that they have for when these things happen. What happens if no one is there with a camera? If somebody had not recorded that, only the people involved would have known it. We know that this is just the tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. So what culture is the organization going to build that fosters accountability measures for when these things do happen outside of the eye of the public?
I wish we had more time. I appreciate you both talking to us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Adara Ayira has conducted anti-racism trainings for more than 20 years. She's director of programs at Associated Black Charities. Raymond Winbush is research professor and director of the Institute for Urban Research at Morgan State University. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for joining us. Come back tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.